This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It is a gorgeous day today for being the first part of January. It's like 60 degrees outside. You know, it was supposed to be 62 degrees outside. I thought it was supposed to be getting a little cooler and then walked outside. Hey! So anyways, been a good week. It's Thursday today. It is episode 145. We are counting down to the three-year mark. Have to figure out what we're going to do for the three-year mark. Which, as I have said before, effectively means that no one will ever listen to all of these. Because at this point, who is going to go back and listen to 145 episodes at approximately 20 minutes apiece? That means there's, what, 40-some plus hours of hearing me talk? Yeah, I don't think so. Someone would have to be really bored. Anyways, it's been a good week this week. Had an extra little project show up that I've been working on this week. I don't think I mentioned it last week, but I probably mentioned it the week before last. Met with the stakeholder on that this week. He seemed very pleased with the progress. And so I've just been working along, trying to get the rest of that put together with a fellow coworker. And so that all seems to be going fine. What else? I've started writing again on Grumpy Old Prophets Part 4, which is Book 3. I gave all the beta readers another couple of weeks on Part 1 because it was through Christmas and everything was just crazy. I am recruiting beta readers for Parts 2 and 3, which is Book 2 at this point. And so I'll keep that up for another couple of weeks here. Well, another week and a half here, and then we'll just go with whatever beta readers we have for that. And then I should have all the input back in that's going to come back in from Part 1. And, you know, I will, at that point, then probably start editing up Part 1 to get it squared away. And get it nailed down and released. There's a part of me that thinks, you know, you should just hang on until you have them all done in case you need to go back and do some tweaking. Which might be an interesting thing to do. I don't know. I have to think about that some more. Anyways, I think I am finally recovered from my cold. Although I've had a little few vestiges left that are a little weird, but I think I'm getting there, which is really good because I'm ready. I am ready to be done with this cold because I haven't been able to kiss my wife on the mouth. I haven't been doing that now for a while. Because I haven't wanted to give her my germs. So I'm hoping that we are wrapped up on that. And if we are, it'll be good. Anyways, I came across an interesting little article a couple of days ago called The Joy of Quiet. And I'm always sort of interested in the ideas in life of, no matter how sophisticated, no matter how advanced, no matter how technologically savvy we are, there are certain core, fundamental orientations which remain. And I'm always interested in those things. That even though we think we've gotten oh so smart and oh so advanced, there are simple truths that are still true. And frankly, one of the things that appeals to me so deeply about what Jesus Christ taught as the way to become successful in life is that when you look at his teachings are culturally transcendent, and they are societally transcendent, and they are geographically transcendent. They just work. They're simple, basic things that just work. So when I was reading this article, I was smiling because I just found it fascinating. The article was written, and I'm going to mispronounce his name, sorry in advance. The article was written by Pico Iyer, I-Y-E-R, P-I-C-O-I-Y-E-R, Pico Iyer. And apparently he's a writer and has written some novelists, and novelists written some novels, things like that. And he travels around, I guess, and speaks at some conferences and things, which is kind of a good gig. I need to figure out how to get on that gig. Just go around and talk. But anyways, he talked about the fact that a year ago he had flown to Singapore, and he was there with writer Malcolm Gladwell, which I have heard of, fashion designer Mark Echo, which I have not, well, no, maybe I've heard of him, and the graphic designer Stefan Sagmeister, whom I have not heard of. Anyways, they were addressing people on marketing to the child of tomorrow, because, of course, the marketers want to know how they can sell things to babies in diapers, but never, not really. They're just trying to stay ahead of the trends so they can get there before everybody else, which is fine. That's business. That's what you do. It's fine. So anyways, he was over there, and the chief executive of the agency that had invited them pulled him off to the side and said, was going to tell them what he was most interested in. And so he was saying, you know, this is what I'm most interested in. And this writer said he was kind of bracing for impact to hear. He wasn't sure what. And he was surprised to hear that this chief executive, what he was most interested in, tell you what, I've got to let a guy in because, come on. No, no, he's not coming in. Okay, never mind. He said what he was most interested in was stillness. How to be still. The writer also talks about how a few months later, he had read an interview with what he terms the perennially cutting edge designer Philippe Starck. Sorry, haven't heard of him, but I will take his word for it that he is a perennially cutting edge. I mean, always got the best ideas, that kind of stuff, right out there in the edge. And in the interviewer had asked him what allowed him to remain so consistently ahead of the curve. But his answer is really very interesting. He says, I never read any magazines or watch TV, nor do I go to cocktail parties, dinners, or anything like that. I live alone, mostly, in the middle of nowhere. In other words, he has plenty of time to be still. And apparently, the writer of this article goes on to mention, I was not aware of this, but apparently there is kind of a new trend in this. The writer of the article talks about the future of travel, that he's been told that the future of travel lies in what are called, quote, black hole resorts, unquote. That you pay high prices precisely because you can't get online in their rooms. That people are wanting to go places to get away from the internet and their cell phones and all that kind of thing. Well, what's interesting is the author is pondering the fact that it's really come to this, that we've had this generation where all of a sudden we have all this information that's available for us. all this knowledge that's available. And yet, in his words, the more we find ways to connect, the more of us seem desperate to disconnect. Which is very interesting. It's very, very interesting to me. He talked about the fact that there are actually internet rescue camps in South Korea and China that try to save kids from being addicted to their screens. He also says that he has writer friends who pay good money to get the Freedom software. It's called Freedom software, that allows them to disable their internet connection for up to 8 hours, apparently not get back on, because they're constantly going to the web as opposed to writing. So they're trying to shut the stuff off and not be tempted so that they can go and actually do what they're supposed to be doing. One thing I hadn't heard about, and I thought was interesting as well, is that apparently Intel in 2007 experimented with sort of an interesting idea. They gave 300 of their engineers and their managers 4 hours of uninterrupted quiet time on Tuesday mornings. So they just said, look, 4 hours, Tuesday mornings, unplug everything. Just be quiet and think about stuff. You know, he does quote a statistic that's interesting, that he found a statistic somewhere that the average office worker today, researchers have found, enjoys no more than 3 minutes at their desk without interruptions. Which, you know, I don't think that that's impossible to believe. I think I get a little more time than that, but I can understand that. So, during this period, for these workers, they were not allowed to use the phone or send email, but simply had the chance to clear their heads and hear themselves think. And a majority in the group that tried it recommended that the policy be expanded to others. He goes on to quote to say that the average American spends at least 8.5 hours a day in front of a screen. And that he said, I've heard myself tell marketers in Singapore that people in the future will crave nothing more than being able to get away from the blinking screens, because that is what has become scarce in our lives. Stillness has become scarce. And what's interesting about all this is that the more we invent all these technologies to increase our knowledge and make everything available to us, the more we discover that simply having a lot of knowledge, having access to a lot of knowledge, doesn't necessarily make us wiser or more joyful. In fact, they're saying that that people, where is that quote? One moment. There was a quote in the article somewhere, and it's getting dark, so I can't see my notes anymore. But there was a quote in the article somewhere that was talking about the fact that the people who did take time to be still found that for the rest of the time, they were sharper, they had more ideas, they were more focused, they could get more done. And part of that is because they had a chance, I think, to kind of quiet themselves down, have better access to God speaking to them. And we'll get back to that in a little bit. But there's more quotes in this article. It was really pretty interesting. Blaise Pascal, who was a philosopher in the 17th century, He famously remarked one time that all of man's problems come from his inability to sit quietly in a room alone. That's pretty interesting. Anyways, the gist of the rest of the article really is that the central paradox of the machines that have made our lives so much brighter, quicker, and longer and healthier is that they cannot teach us how to make the best use of it. The only thing, the only way to do justice to our on-screen lives is by summoning the emotional and moral clarity that can't be found on any other screen. And I thought that was really important. Because again, what he's saying is that in order to be grounded in life, in order to know what to do with all this information that you have access to, in order to acquire wisdom, you can't get it just by going out and surfing the web. You really need a chance to assimilate it. You need a chance to think. And he equates that with getting quiet. But as I started to mention just a few minutes ago, I think there is another dynamic at work as well. And that is, you can have all this information that's hitting you in the face, but you really don't know what to do with it until you get yourself quiet enough that you can hear God whispering. And whether or not people recognize that God is whispering to them under the surface, the fact is He is. And once they start getting quiet and start having this information, then all of a sudden they can start evaluating the information in a better way. And they begin to plug it in and reject the stuff that needs to be rejected and assimilate the stuff that needs to be assimilated. But if you never get quiet, if you're just running around all the time going, ah, you know, then you never reach that point where you can get the stuff assimilated. And especially if you haven't learned that there are two voices within you, and the voice that's making the most noise and jumping up and down is probably the voice you don't want to listen to. And one of the great things that getting quiet does is if you can actually learn to get quiet, as opposed to every time you get in a room by yourself and closing your eyes, all you hear is, and then you need to go, and then, because if that's all you're hearing, it doesn't matter if the room is quiet and you're by yourself, you still haven't gotten quiet. What you need to do is you need to not listen to that voice. You need to focus on God, focus on His stillness, and bring your heart and your mind into a position of quiet. And frankly, this is one of the things that meditation does for people, whether or not they're Christians. You can get a good benefit out of meditation whether or not you name the name of Jesus. And I think it's all traced back to the fact that as you learn to meditate, as you learn to still your mind and not listen to all that noise that your flesh is generating, as you learn to push that aside, what you begin to do is you begin to hear and commune with God. And in the process of that, you become more calm, you become more centered, you realize that there is more than just you, that there's an extra dimension to life, and it improves your life whether or not you name the name of Jesus, because God loves people, and He'll reach people wherever they are, and He will help them wherever they are, and give them creativity wherever they are. But the first thing that needs to happen is you've got to tamp down that voice that's causing all that noise inside you. And if that means turning off the TV, getting off the computer, shutting off your cell phone, so that you can get alone and get quiet, and you can practice stillness, then fine. Now, I absorb a lot of information during the day, but I do try to make a habit of stillness and quietness the whole time. I'm working through the day. I was working with an associate today, and we were working on producing a report in, sorry, Geek Talk, SQL Server Reporting Services 2008. Unbeknownst to me, when you do a rectangle on the top of a report as a header, and then you put what's called a matrix report inside that rectangle, it doesn't render correctly. And I could not figure out why in the world this was not rendering correctly. We spent an hour looking at different things, moving things around, because sometimes we'd move some things around and then it would be okay and it would work all right, and then other times it wouldn't, and then, I mean, it was just, and I told my associate at the time we were working with it, okay, I have done something to get this report upside down and we have to figure out what it is. And eventually, you know, working with the moving of the Spirit and listening to what the Spirit was saying, I was able to figure out what the triggers were and figure out, okay, we can't do it that way, we got to do it another way. I'm grabbing my mail. But we got it. You know, I plan to not leave quite as late as I left, but I was there a couple extra minutes and it was fine. But the only reason I got it was A, because I was practicing an attitude of stillness through the whole thing. And my coworker, my associate, by the time we were all done, my associate said, "You're very patient." And I said, "Well, sometimes you just gotta, you know, keep working at it, and eventually you get it." But I don't think that I would have been able to really figure out what was going on unless I was practicing an attitude of quiet. I'm backing into my garage. This is why I think this is so important, is because as you're quiet, if your life is not consumed with frantic running to and fro and worrying about tomorrow and thinking what's going to happen when this happens and, oh, won't that, you know, blah, 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 you know, all that stuff. If your life is consumed with that, I don't think I'm quite straight in the garage. I'm going to try this one more time. And you don't ever get quiet. You never have a chance to hear all those little suggestions that God is giving you for how you can solve some of the difficulties that you're facing. But if you do get quiet, and especially if you practice an attitude of quiet, it's amazing how things work out and how God communicates and how He assists us and helps us figure out even these oddball things like what I was trying to do today. So I recommend quiet. I think having some quiet time just by yourself is great, but I also highly recommend making a practice of quiet and stillness as you move through your day. Moving away from things that cause a lot of churning in your soul. Moving away from things that are distractions and moving towards things that will help you focus, help you stay calm, help you work through the things that you need to, and really making a habit of being very methodical and being very aware of God's voice within you, and then just believing that He's going to help you with everything, and then just moving through the problems one right after another. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.